VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And friends, we thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. You know, despite all the difficulties our nation has endured and is enduring, we are blessed. Blessed with many freedoms and liberties that the majority of the world is denied. But sadly, we take these liberties and freedoms for granted, forgetting the bravery and the courage that our founders had. The Declaration of Independence begins with these words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." You know, the grievances against the crown were many. And those in the new land, well, they had simply had enough. Yes, the chains that shackled the colonies to Great Britain were being broken. And to gain this freedom, there was a price to be paid. And our founders knew that. As a matter of fact, the Declaration closes with these words, "And for the support of this Declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." How many of us listening right now would take such a pledge? Our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor, really? Would you really take such a pledge? I mean, these 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were concerned by their posterity. Today, it seems we're more concerned by our prosperity. Today, we're going to focus on the price of freedom. Joining us, we welcome William J. Federer. He's a nationally known speaker, historian, author, and president of Amerisearch. He's the author of numerous books, Who is the King in America? Socialism, the Real History from Plato to Present. How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control is the subtitle for that book. Also, the America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations. It's a powerful research tool. Bill is a speaker on the American Minute Daily broadcast as well. And Bill, we'd like to welcome you back here to Crosstalk.
Jim, great to be with you.
Bill, when we think of the life and times for the people in the colonies, and we're going to talk about what life was like at this time before, you know, that led us up to the Declaration of Independence, the heavy hand of Britain was really on them, was it not?
Right. So the most common form of government in world history is kings: Nimrod, Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. And as the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger because with military advancements, kings can kill more people. Instead of killing with a rock like Cain killed Abel, they can kill with a bronze weapon or an iron weapon or a phalanx spear, scimitar, sword, gunpowder. The weapon improves, but it's that same fallen, selfish nature. And then with technological advancements, kings can track more people. And ultimately, the King of England had the biggest empire on the planet. The sun never set. They had Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guyana, Canada, Barbados, Bermuda, Jamaica, and India. In 1714, the British landed in Bengal and opened a trading force, turned into a trading fort, turned into them having guns, and they would give guns to one kingdom and guns to another kingdom until they stirred up discord, and then they conquered the whole kingdom. Hmm. And in 1770, they had a Bengal famine. 10 million people died because when the British came in, they're like, the way you've been doing stuff for centuries is not making money. We want you to spend all your effort on, you know, silk and stuff. Well, they didn't know about the monsoons, and they didn't know about the droughts. And so 10 million people die, and the British East India Company is going bankrupt. And they're the biggest company that Britain has. And so they go to their parliament and said, "We need help." And the parliament says, "Okay, we're going to do a bailout." We're familiar in America of governments bailing out debts. And so they allow them to tax the people in England, and the people in England don't like that. And so they say, okay, no taxes in England, but we're going to tax the colonies. And so they begin to pass these taxes, the tea tax in 1773, and they would exempt the British but make the colonies pay. They would make it illegal for other countries to bring stuff to the colonies, the Dutch, the French, the Spanish, whoever. And then they would cut out the middlemen, and then they wanted to take away our ability to have our own money in America. And then they took away more and more of our freedoms. And then in the middle of that, you had what's called the French and Indian War. And so British left troops in America because they didn't have any barracks, and the troops would stay in your house, and they'd look down their noses upon you because you might be a Congregationalist or a Presbyterian or a Baptist, and they were the King's Church, the Anglicans, and so in Boston they took the church, the Old South Meeting House, and they turned it into a stable, and they would take the pews and tilt them up and make them horse troughs, and so the crowd gathers, and young kids throw snowballs at the British soldiers in Boston. And some of the snowballs had rocks and shells in them, and they were hurting. And so the soldiers were called out, and the captain, supposedly he said, cease fire. But some of the soldiers said, because of the yelling and screaming, all they heard was the fire part, and they fired into the crowd, killing half dozen or so, including Crispus Attucks, the first black man to die in the Revolution. And it was Paul Revere, who was an engraver, a silversmith, but they didn't have photographs they could print, but they could print engravings. So he did an engraving of this Boston Massacre. And with the help of Ben Franklin, who was the postmaster general of the colonies, they were able to spread this news. It was their version of a podcast or the internet. They could spread this news because the king controlled all communication. He had the king's presses. And of course, the Stamp Act was that any piece of paper had to have a king's stamp on it, and you had to pay a tax for that. So you couldn't have him stamping something. And then the king took away the paying of the judges. And you think, well, big deal. Who cares who pays the judges? No, they know that loyalty goes with the paycheck. Even the Bible talks about, you know, don't let judges take money or a bribe because it'll turn their heart. So when the judges are getting money from the king, guess what? They're not going to give fair trials. It's sort of like, you know, where you in a country where you have a two-tiered justice system. I know it's hard for us to imagine that type of thing. And but so you had the king then inciting the Indians. So the Americans and the Indians had reached an equilibrium, and the British go to the Indians and stir them up to attack. General Johnny Burgoyne lands in Canada, meets with the Mohawk Indians, and stirs them up to attack and scalp the Americans. And was so bad that it's listed as one of the 27 reasons in the Declaration that we were rebelling against the king. And so in the Declaration, they knew in the future there would be some people that say, well, maybe they did wrong in rebelling. It's like, okay, look, we're going to list these. They did hit a very, very important topic, and you made an allusion to it at the beginning. Our rights come from God. This is the most revolutionary concept. Because if our rights come from a creator, then the purpose of the government is to guarantee to us our creator-given rights.
Right.
If the rights come from the government, well, what the government giveth, the government can taketh awayeth. And so our founder said, King, you are infringing on our creator-given rights. Therefore, we're justified in rebelling against you. And and then there's the first real battle resistance in America was back in the early 1700s, and it was the Pine Tree Rebellion. And you think, what's that? Well, Massachusetts used to include Maine. Maine didn't turn into its own state until 1820 as a free state when Missouri came in as a slave state. So Maine was actually part of Massachusetts, and Maine had trees, 100-foot pine trees. And the British needed these for the masts of their navy. So one of the reasons the British could have a global navy is because they had ships with these really tall sails that they got from Maine. And so in the early 1700s, one of the king's agents would wander onto your farm, and he would take out a hatchet, and he'd begin to make a mark on the pine trees that you were going to use to build your barn. And he wrote in a little book, made note, and those trees now belong to the king, and you can never chop them down. And they would do this farm after, and people would be like, so a bunch of guys put soot on their face, broke into the inn where the king's agent was staying, and they had pine switches, and they whipped the poor guy. Those guys were eventually caught and punished, but then they actually had a little battle. And so this was considered the first rebellion. So when George Washington personally paid for the very first six ships which would become our Continental Navy. They were called Washington's cruisers. The flag, the first flag of America was the pine tree flag. And it had a pine tree on a white background, and then above it said, appeal to heaven. And so what's that? Well, you have a court case, you lose, you appeal it. You lose it again, you appeal it to the Supreme Court. Well, who's the ultimate court in England? It's the King's Court. What if you don't get justice there? You go above the king's head. You appeal to heaven.
Wow.
And they put that wording on the pine tree flag, and they put it in our Declaration of Independence, appealing to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. Why? Because our rights come from a creator. All men are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Right? All men are created equal. The king did not believe all men were created equal. He believed he was created a little extra special. It's the divine right of kings. God chose me to be the king, so I'm more special. And kings have subjects who are subjected to the king's will. Democracies and republics have citizens. And the word citizen is Greek. It means co-ruler, co-sovereign, co-king. And so when we broke away from king and we stopped being subjects, we set up a republic where the citizen is the king. So it's a polarity change in the flow of power.
Was there a particular tipping point that brought them to this point of okay, saying, you know, we're not going any further, enough is enough, we're going to lay out our grievances here, which we now know as the Declaration of Independence. Was there a tipping point that caused that to take place?
Well,
or was it everything altogether?
One was James Otis in the 1760s during the Stamp Act period of time. And the British passed the writs of assistance. Now, what does that mean? That means that if the king suspects that you're not loyal, he can read all your personal letters and correspondence. He can go into your house and search it anytime he wants and confiscate stuff anytime he wants and take your house and take your farm and take anything just on a suspicion. I mean, this is like the IRS or a January 6th hearing. They can take you and put you away and even just drag you on. So you're not even charged. You're just locked away. And James Otis spoke at this Massachusetts court for 6 hours straight. And John Adams was in the balcony. And he said that the child of the revolution was conceived at that meeting.
Wow.
And so here you have John Adams going out, and he said he just laid out the case. And then you have Patrick Henry and the Parson's Cause. So in Virginia, you had the King's Church called Anglican, and the government would collect taxes. And in the farmers in Virginia, it was mostly tobacco. And then the government would take the taxes and pay the parsons, the Anglican pastors. And there was a drought one year and there was no crops. And I hear the music, so I'll pause. But Patrick Henry stood up to the king and said, "We don't want to pay your parsons."
Wow. Well, friends, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to look further at these 56 signers. And yes, even the fate, some of them indeed did pay with their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. Back in just 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did the Ice Age really happen?
Yes, indeed, Chris. There's a great deal of evidence that the Ice Age really happened. It wasn't long ago. It was at the end of Noah's flood. It probably took several hundred years for the Earth to settle back down into the equilibrium we now experience. That readjustment period was primarily the Ice Age. The real key for the Ice Age is more evaporation from the ocean waters, making huge storms of snowfall possible. But the continents were cold, making the storms violent and prolonged. Also, late in the flood was a time of great volcanism, meaning that the Earth's atmosphere was cloudy and shielded the Earth from the sun. So there was more snowfall, less snow melt, and the ice built up. This would have happened in the centuries following the flood. And that's the flood mentioned back in Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. John. For more information, visit us on the web at icr.org. I'm Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
Price of Freedom. The 56th signer is our topic today. William J. Fitterer is our guest, nationally known speaker, historian, author, and president of Amerisearch Incorporated, and talking today about the price of freedom and the Declaration of Independence. Bill, when we think of the 56 signers, some of them were professionals like lawyers, but some were farmers as well. Is that correct?
Right. And so they signed the Declaration. The first to sign was John Hancock, and he was the president of the Continental Congress. And he signed it with a very large signature, and he said, "Now the king can read my signature without his spectacles," wow, "without his glasses." And then he said, the price on my head is just doubled. And now John Hancock was a merchant, and he would bring stuff into Boston, and the British confiscated one of his ships, literally just took it away. And then he was staying in Lexington at the home where he grew up, which was now the home of his cousin, Lucy Bowes Clark, whose husband was Pastor Jonas Clark. And so the British don't like John Hancock. And so they're sending an army to Lexington to capture John Hancock, the president of the Continental Congress. And the warning is sent because of they knew the British were going to go across the harbor by sea or go over land, and they hang the lantern in the belfry of the church. But they get the word to Pastor Jonas Clark, and he says, "I have trained my church members for this hour. They would fight, and if they need to, die under the shadow of the house of God." And so the British show up. A major Pitcairn shouts, "Disperse, ye villains, ye rebels, disperse, lay down your arms." It's April 19th of 1775. And then the shot is heard around the world. And whether the Americans, but most think the British fired first, a bunch of these church members got killed. Some of them were like crawling up the stairs of their house because it was right next to the church. And then they died on their front porch. Mm. And then the British chased the Americans to the Concord Bridge. And this time the Americans don't run away. And the British tell them to disperse, and the Americans fire. And then you have the people firing at the British from behind barns and behind trees. And then all the local farmers show up, and they're shooting at these British from the hillsides. And these British are like throwing down their arms and just running away. 273 British are killed. Pastor Jonas Clark said, "From this day will be dated the liberty of the world." Hmm. And and then you have this General Gage offering a pardon to anyone that would betray the American cause and would betray John Hancock and Sam Adams. And so then you had Patrick Henry, and he seizes the gunpowder from Williamsburg, Virginia, and the British governor, Lord Dunmore, panics, and he issues a proclamation to go against Patrick Henry and capture him, but Lord Dunmore ends up getting on a ship and sailing away. And then Patrick Henry becomes the first governor of the state of Virginia. Hmm. But on his way out, this Lord Dunmore decides to stop off at, you know, Norfolk and set the city on fire. Like, thanks a lot. And so they would humble the coast. I was speaking up in Portsmouth, Maine, and they go, "Yeah, during the Revolutionary War, the British ships came into this harbor and put their cannons and just set on fire and shot all these houses, and we had to rebuild." And there were stories in New Jersey where they would rape the farmers' wives and the daughters, and they were cruel. And then they would pay people to betray the signers. And now when Ben Franklin signed the Declaration, he was 70 years old, and he said, "We must hang together, or most assuredly we will hang separately." We were taking on the most powerful military force on planet Earth. Sometimes we think it is bad against globalists. Well, the King of England was a globalist. He was a one-world government guy, and we took him on. And so the other signers, 56, 11 had their homes destroyed. 5 were hunted and captured. 17 served in the military. And 9 died during the war, and they never saw the victory.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was 27-year-old George Walton, He signed and was captured at the Battle of Savannah and was wounded. Another was 27-year-old Edward Rutledge, 27 years old. Another 30-year-old, Thomas Hayward Jr., another 34-year-old, Arthur Middleton, and they fought in the Siege of Charleston, and they were captured, and they were made prisoners. And many of them were starved. You had 38-year-old Thomas Nelson. He was a very successful businessman, had a house at Yorktown. The British made his house their headquarters. And when Washington and his men surrounded Yorktown, Thomas Nelson offered 5 guineas to the first man that could fire a cannon at his house. Instead of saying, oh, that's my house, leave it alone. It's like, no, the British are using it, destroy it. And he never got reimbursed for that either. Signer of the Declaration, Carter Braxton, was age 40, and he lost his entire fortune during the war. 42-year-old signer, Thomas McCain. He was hunted like a fox by the enemy, compelled to remove my family 5 times in 3 months. You had a Richard Stockton, and his son was a leader in our Navy that helped in the early 1800s capture California, and there's Stockton, California named after him. But this is during the Revolution. Richard Stockton, he's 46 years old. He's betrayed by one of his neighbors, because the British would go to these neighbors and they'd find a loyalist, and the loyalist is somebody that lives in America, but they're not loyal to America. They're loyal to the king, they're the enemy. And so they snitch, and the British break into Richard Stockton's house, drag him from his bed at night, and then drag him and throw him in a jail. Another is 50-year-old signer Lewis Morris, and he had his home taken by the British and turned it into a barracks where they used it for their soldiers. And then a sad story, Abraham Clark. He was 50 years old when he signed the Declaration, and he had 2 sons, and they were captured. And the British would put the captured soldiers on starving ships. And so Abraham Clark's 2 sons were imprisoned and tortured on this starving ship. And during the Revolution, more people died on starving ships than died in battle. And there were 11,000. So one of them was the Jersey. And Yale President Ezra Stiles talks about this in the speech in 1783. Oh, that my head were waters and my eye a fountain of tears, that I might weep for the thousands of our brethren who have perished on British starving ships. And one, the Jersey, then lying in New York, perished above 11,000 the last 3 years, while others have been barbarously exiled to the East Indies for life. And they had a ship, the Scorpion, the Hope, the Falmouth, the Stromboli, the Hunter. And so in America, we would capture British soldiers and the Hessians, these Germans that were mercenaries that were hired. And we would make them lift their hand and promise not to take up arms against America again. And we would let them go. I mean, partly because we didn't have prisons and we didn't have enough soldiers to fight the battles, much less guard captured prisoners. And so we would let them go. Well, when the British captured Americans, they did not do that. They would turn schools and churches into prisons. And when those filled up, they would put them on these starving ships where they wouldn't feed them. And you would be like weakened and emaciated. And, you know, if you jumped overboard, the water's freezing and you're at least, you know, a mile from shore, and you'd be frozen by the time you got there. And of course they would see you and shoot you anyway. And so at Fort Greene Park in New York City, a borough of Brooklyn, there is a monument to the British ship martyrs of these 11,000 that died. Wow. And then you had 11,000 soldiers under Washington have to retreat out of Philadelphia because the British capture Philadelphia. And they're at Valley Forge, 11,000 of them. And it just happens to be a freezing, freezing winter. And some of the soldiers are as young as 12 years old. Others are as old as 60 years old. And many are from European descent, but you had African-Americans and American Indians and they're all fighting for American independence. And then you had people coming over from Europe to help us out, and one of them was Marquis de Lafayette. And so at the Valley Forge, soldiers died at a rate of 12 per day. 2,500 either died of typhoid, jaundice, dysentery, pneumonia, or simply froze to death. Their uniforms were, the threads would come loose, and so the Continental Congress reported feet and legs froze till they became black. It was often necessary to amputate them. And then a little unknown story is the women would follow their husbands, and they would have a camp of their own. And so they were nicknamed camp followers. But that does not do them justice, because the women were the one that mended the clothes, did the laundry, scavenged for food, and took care of the sick and the dying. And an estimated 500 women died at Valley Forge. And you had a Mrs. Westlake wrote of Martha Washington, and she said, I saw Lady Washington, and I never in my life saw a woman so busy from morning till night taking care of the wounded soldiers. And Calvin Coolidge gave an address to the Daughters of the American Revolution. We've been told of the unselfish devotion of the women who gave of their own warm garments of fashion clothing for the suffering Continental Army during that bitter winter at Valley Forge. The burdens of the war were not all borne by men. And then you had an interesting story. There was a cabal, an inside group, that wanted to get rid of Washington. And they thought that he was not a good general. And they wanted to put in a Charles Lee or somebody. And so you had people plotting behind the scenes to get rid of Washington. And, I mean, I know this is sort of hard that you could actually have people in, you know, the government wanting to get rid of a leader. And so food was being sent to the soldiers at Valley Forge, but it was being diverted to a warehouse. And you had Patrick Henry, the governor of Virginia, writing a letter to George Washington saying, did you get the stuff I sent you? And Washington's like, no, we're starving. We're not getting anything. We're freezing to death. And Patrick Henry starts writing letters, and he's scathing these people. He says, what in the world? I sent stuff from our state, and why is it? And they found out that there was this logistics officer, Mifflin, and he was having this stuff stored in some barn, and they had some excuse why it wasn't getting to the troops, but they think that he was part of the Conway cabal. Thomas Conway was someone that was passed over by Washington for a promotion, and so he was networking with people to get rid of Washington and replace him with Horatio Gates or somebody else. And so you had Charles Carroll, a Catholic signer of the Declaration. He was instrumental in persuading Congress to keep George Washington as commander-in-chief.
Bill Fitter is with us here today. We're up against a break and talking about the price of freedom. Friends, many of these matters just not even aware of. And as a result, we are soon to lose these freedoms if we do not continue to cherish them and fight for them, and certainly to have knowledge what people have gone through. We're going to be taking a quick break. We'll come back with more information in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
George Washington said, "It is impossible to rightly govern the world without God and the Bible." Andrew Jackson said, "That book, sir, is the rock upon which our republic rests." Theodore Roosevelt said, "A thorough knowledge of the Bible is worth more than a college education." These and over 2,000 other direct quotations revealing the godly heritage of America can be found in America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations by William Federer. This volume of over 800 pages cites founding fathers, presidents, statesmen, state constitutions, and court decisions. This reference tool is available in softcover for a donation of $30 or hardcover for $40. Call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We're talking about the price of freedom today with a special emphasis on the 56 signers. Of course, there were those non-signers who also gave their lives and paid the ultimate price as a result of providing for us the freedoms that we so take for granted, I believe, in our nation here today. Friends, Bill has put together numerous books, but we're offering one today that's entitled America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations. It is a fascinating book. It's a reference volume. There's over 800 pages of quotes from founding fathers. There's presidents, statesmen, constitutions. There are court decisions that are referenced in here. Scientists, explorers, pioneers, business leaders, military leaders, pointing to the God and Country quotes that have come from these leaders. Again, over 800 pages, over 2,000 direct quotations revealing the godly heritage of America. And friends, we're making this comprehensive volume available. It comes in soft cover or hard cover. Soft cover is available for a donation of $30, a hard cover for a donation of $40, and available at vcyamerica.org. VCYAmerica.org, or you may call this number, 1-800. It comes to our switchboard, 1-800-729-9829. That's 800-729-9829. Bill, the book is really a masterpiece, and it is such that I know it's one of your earlier books, but it's really a reference volume, and there have been a number of political leaders that have actually quoted from this book in response to things or taken positions on things. It's been a volume of great help to many.
Well, I have run into lots of congressmen, senators that said they've quoted out of it on the floor of Congress. I was humbled that the U.S. Supreme Court cited the book by name in a decision back in 2013, 14, the city of Greece, New York, was opening with prayer in Jesus' name. ACLU sues to stop them. And the Justice Anthony Kennedy writes the decision and said, even our Continental Congress opened with prayer in Jesus' name. Reverend Jacob Boucher, here's the prayer. And then it came to the source. It says, W. Federer, America's God and Country.
And, tremendous.
But I have noticed that of my books, people will say, oh, I read that. But the America's God and Country, they'll say, oh, I use that.
Right. I use
that. Pastors say I use it in my speeches. I've had students say I use that in my. I've had professors say that I've used that in my classes. So it's just a collection of quotes are arranged alphabetically. Abigail Adams is under A. Booker T. Washington is under W. You can just open it up and read the quote, and it has all the endnotes.
Friends, again, America's God and Country Encyclopedia Quotations. It's a tremendous volume, over 800 pages, and again, all alphabetically arranged. And quotes from so many. It's available right now on our website, vcyamerica.org, or you may call 1-800-729-9829. Again, the soft cover available for donation of $30, the hard cover donation of $40 here to VCY America. Well, we're talking today about the price of freedom and a special emphasis on the 56 signers. And Bill, I really believe we live in a time that we take these freedoms for granted. We just make lots of assumptions, and we know no other life than these freedoms. But these 56 signers pledged their very lives. They pledged their fortune. They pledged their sacred honor. These were more than just words to them. They really had to pay dearly, as you've pointed out, in those very aspects. Some did have to pledge with their life, some with their fortune and having their homes destroyed, things stolen from them, merchants who had lost the possessions and their sacred honor, just their integrity as well at stake. And I was looking even at a website here that had ages of these 56 signers. Some were as young as 26 and 27. You referenced also Benjamin Franklin, age 70 years old. And several of these people, they died young, 40s and 50s, as a result of the pledge that they took.
Right. One was 53-year-old signer Reverend John Witherspoon. He was a Presbyterian minister. He taught at Princeton, and he taught several of the signers of the Constitution. And he had a son, James, who was killed during the Revolutionary War at the Battle of Germantown. There was a 60-year-old signer, Philip Livingston. He lost several properties to the British, and he died before the war ended. He never saw the victory. This is a sad 63-year-old signer, Francis Lewis, found out that the British had plundered his home and had carried away his wife, Elizabeth, and put her in prison. And the British wanted to make an example of her. So they denied her a change of clothes. They denied her a bed. They gave her nothing but the most meager food. She was treated so harshly when she finally was released, she died shortly after. I mean, this cruel treatment. And then you have John Hart, 65-year-old signer. He had a neighbor snitch on him to the British. The British show up. They loot his home. He and his family have to run away, and they hide, and they have to live in a cave. And they're, like, fleeing from one place to another, and he dies before the war ends. And 41-year-old signer John Adams, he wrote to his wife, Abigail. He says, after they signed the Declaration, "I'm apt to believe that it, the day they signed the Declaration, will be celebrated by succeeding generations as a great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as a day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty." And then he goes on, "It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfire, illuminations from one end of the continent to the other, from this time forward forevermore." But he says, with solemn acts of devotion to Almighty God, then, and that's what the way it was. You know, a French historian traveled America in 1835. He was a friend of Alexis de Tocqueville, but his name was Gustave de Beaumont. And so Gustave de Beaumont wrote, "I have seen a meeting of the Senate in Washington open with prayer, and the anniversary festival of the Declaration of Independence consists in the United States of an entirely religious ceremony." So here's a French guy visiting America on the anniversary festival of the Declaration, and he calls it an entirely religious ceremony.
Wow.
And then John Adams writes again to his wife. He says, "You think me transported with enthusiasm, but I am not. I am well aware of the toil and blood and treasure that it will cost us to maintain this declaration and support and defend these states. Yet through all the gloom, I can see rays of ravishing light and glory. I can see that the end is worth more than all the means, and that prosperity will triumph in that day's transaction, even though we should rue it or regret it, which I trust God we shall not." And and then there's a quote from Patrick Henry, and he says, you know, he talks about the future generations and how we hope that you will value the sacrifice that we made for you. John Adams says, "Posterity, you will never know the sacrifice that our generation gave for yours. I hope you make good use of it. If not, we will repent in heaven."
Wow, wow. You know, Bill, many may not realize this too, and I want to get this little tidbit in, but there is actually a memorial to the 56 signers of the Declaration.
Yes, the
located
they were very, very courageous, and so it's worth us remembering them and realizing the sacrifice. Again, they gave us a present. The first draft that Jefferson gave of the Declaration got rid of slavery, but South Carolina and Georgia wouldn't go along with it. And that since they said the Declaration had to be unanimous, and because New York had just been invaded, they panicked. And how we wish they would have stuck to it and gotten rid of slavery right at the beginning. But thankfully, Republican Lincoln got rid of it later. But the founders were putting all on the line. As you mentioned, they sacrificed their prosperity for their posterity. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, many today are sacrificing their posterity for prosperity. They're switching it around.
Yeah, we've just got it reversed here today.
Yeah. Thank you for correcting that there. So, but another Sam Adams, 54 years old, and he said, "We have this day restored the sovereign to whom all men ought to be obedient. He reigns in heaven, and from the rising to the setting of the sun, let his kingdom come. So they viewed what they were doing as restoring God as being in charge, not this king. 34-year-old signer, James Wilson. And he later signed the Constitution and was later put on the Supreme Court by George Washington. James Wilson knew what we were doing was really unique. He says, after a period of 6,000 years since creation, the United States exhibit to the world the first instance of a nation assembling voluntarily and deciding that system of government under which they and their posterity should live.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that what we were doing was so different than kings, because the whole rest of the world, the default setting for human government is gangs, right? And a gang leader, if he gets enough weapons, he's called the king. And yeah. But he knew we were doing something totally different. We were making the people the king.
Mm-hmm. Bill, we're just a couple minutes from the break, and friends, we're going to open our phone lines here as well. If you'd like to ask a question pertaining to the 56 signers, the price of freedom, our number here, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. But I'd like to ask you, Bill, what should be our takeaway? Okay, we talked about these were people more concerned about the posterity of the nation than their own prosperity. We've got it backwards here today in our way of thinking. But what should be our takeaway to the people of America today?
So having the citizen be the king is not just a blessing. It is a responsibility.
Mm.
Because if things go wrong, we're to blame. Like if you go in the Old Testament and you're going through the streets of Jerusalem and you're witnessing murder, rape, crime, you get into the king's chamber and he's all worried and he looks up at you and he says, I wish somebody would fix this mess. And you like reach over and tap him on the shoulder and say, excuse me, you're the king. This is your kingdom. I think you're the one responsible to fix it. Well, that's like somebody in America watching TV and seeing all the terrible stuff saying, I wish somebody would fix it. Hello, have a finger reach through the screen and tap you on the shoulder. Mm. You're the king.
Wow.
You're the one accountable to God to fix this mess. Well, I need somebody to tell me what to do. Since when does the king sit on his throne and say, can somebody tell me what I'm supposed to do? No, it's your job to get educated on the issues, seek God's will, and you tell your representatives what needs to happen, and God will give you all kinds of ideas. And to make elections honest. And, you know, I talked to some moms, and they're the ones that said, I don't want that stuff taught to my kids, and they're getting involved in winning school board races. And, you know, I think as more power concentrates globally into fewer hands, God's counterbalance is to get more people involved locally, right? Fewer people globally, God's counterbalance, more people locally. We need to... And I ran for Congress several times. You know, I tell people stories, raising millions of dollars. For most people, they say, I'll never do that. But say, forget the national races. You drive by a school every day,
mm-hmm.
and you know what they're teaching. And if it's different than what Jesus taught, Jesus said in the beginning, God made them male and female.
Yeah.
And if you're silent, you're giving consent to that. And Jesus says, if you let one of these little ones leave me stubble, better than a millstone be put on your neck.
Friends, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back to your phone calls. William J. Fitterer is our guest today on Crosstalk. We're discussing the price of freedom with a special emphasis on the 56 signers. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Listen up, Americans. Right now, 5 states in the United States of America are embroiled in a battle for private property. And lest you say, I don't live in one of those 5 states, what do I care? Well, you should, because it's going to set legal precedent for the violation of your private property rights in one form or another. The stage is being set for this legally to become the law of the land. Case precedents. I'm talking about North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota. Many farmers, 4th and 5th generation farmers and ranchers, are fighting a company that wants to put in a carbon capture pipeline. In fact, they're already entering onto their property, violating their private property rights, threatening eminent domain, and running through their crops with heavy machinery. The carbon capture pipeline in South Dakota and North Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota. Check it out. Get informed.
The the price of freedom, the 56 signers. Matter of fact, the memorial to the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence is depicting the signatures of the 56 signatories to the U.S. Declaration of Independence, located in the Constitution Gardens. It's on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. It's accessible to the public by crossing a wooden bridge onto a small island set in the lake between Constitution Avenue and the Reflecting Pool, not far from the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Very interesting indeed. Our lines are packed here today. Bill Federer is our guest. And let's go to the calls here. We've got Mark in Monroe, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yeah, to me, the biggest indictment on America is the biblical principle, too much is expected, or too much has been given, too much is expected.
Yeah.
My fear is if America has blown its God-given blessing and trodden it underfoot, again, my fear is just how much are we under God's judgment? Yeah. That's my comment.
Indeed. Yeah. Thank you for making that. And we see often through scriptures how God used enemy nations to bring judgment against his chosen people. And Bill, it's not outside of, the possibility that enemy nations, even to the United States, would be used to bring punishment to us as well.
Yeah, the children of Israel went into the promised land, made a covenant with God. Then they were blessed. Then they backslid. Then God sent prophets to tell them to repent. They didn't. Then it says God sent judgment. Then they repented, and God raised up a deliverer, Joshua, Gideon, Samson, Jephthah. Then they renewed their covenant. They were blessed. They backslid. He sent prophets. They didn't repent. Judgment came. Then they repented. God sent a deliverer. 13 times in the book of Judges. Well, America made a covenant with God. You said we did? Well, the Declaration does say appealing to the supreme judge of the world. Mm-hmm. We're appealing to him. And then America's blessed. And then America backslid through slavery. And we had abolitionist society tell us to repent. We didn't. Judgment came. And then we had a civil war. And then afterwards, right, we renewed our covenant with God and had a National Day of Thanksgiving. And but we've gone around that cycle to major and minor degrees. You think of all the kids.
We've got Wayne calling in from Gregory, South Dakota. You're on the air, Wayne.
Hi, thank you. Our country sets aside one day to celebrate the birth of our nation and the sacrifice of these brave men and women from those days. And if they could see how this LGBTQ movement wants to have a whole month to force us to, celebrate, air quotes, celebrate their perversions, they would be appalled to see what nation has devolved into. It's really sad.
It is sad.
That's
Wayne,
all I wanted to say.
Thank you for raising that issue. A good point there, Bill.
Yeah, I was visiting with the mayor of Anchorage, Alaska, and he was talking about wanting to have July be American Pride Month, but have it be pride in being an American and pride in how we've had these great freedoms and the sacrifices that were made for them, and we need to realize that it's a responsibility. Much is given, much is required, as the caller shared.
We've got Peter in Soldiers Grove, Wisconsin. Peter, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is there a really good book on American history? Because I know that my dad one time said, well, we're Pennsylvania Dutch, which I asked him, we're Amish, and he said, no, Pennsylvania Dutch are where the Hessians went to Pennsylvania after the Revolutionary War. And also, in our genealogy of the William Ward family, it had Artemus Ward as the first commander-in-chief of the Continental Army, and I was just wondering if that was true, or how that was, how George Washington was the first commander-in-chief of the Continental Army.
Okay, Bill?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked about the books, because I've written lots of history books on America, and they're available through VCY, America's God and Country, Miracles in American History. But Artemus Ward was one of the leaders. And that when you put together the country, each state had their own militia, and he was a leader during the French and Indian War, and then many of them got involved in the Revolution, but Washington wasn't picked to be the commander until after the Battle of Bunker Hill. And so But and the same thing with the Navy. It was basically Massachusetts is the one who had the Navy, and it was a long time before we actually had an American Navy.
Yep, and that's another whole program in itself. Thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Diana in Tucson, Arizona, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I was curious if you could maybe tell us, when did the curriculum change in the schools when they stopped teaching all of this to the children, the true history to our children, and now they falsified a lot of that? And I just wanted to add the comment that we can do our fighting on our knees. So let's start praying, people. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Bill, we do know that the textbooks of yesteryear, the New England Primer and others, are quite different than what we see today in our textbooks. We're down to just a minute here. What would you like to share?
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons I wrote my books. But the 1950s, after World War II, you had the Soviets decide that they needed to infiltrate countries and infiltrate the education system and have Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States and what turned into the 1619 Project. It's a process called deconstruction, where you say bad things about the country's founders so people detach from them, and then you can brainwash them into whatever future you have planned for them. It's like a gene replacement therapy, only you do it in the classroom by taking out the old history and putting in this altered revisionist history. But in the 1950s and 60s is when it really began to change. And the getting of God out of the schools, Madeline Murray O'Hare, right, the lawsuits to get the Bible taken out. But that is, what are the stories we love best in the Bible? It's when God's people are in a hopeless situation and he raises up a little Gideon, a Deborah, a Moses, a David. The stories we love best is it looks hopeless and God raises up little nobodies, right? On a local level, they decide, I'm going to step forward. And then God rolls up his sleeves and does miraculous stuff.
It's
this
amazing.
Is just our turn.
Friends, there's so much more we could say here today. We've run out of time. Bill has just pulled together so much information in his books and a library books we're offering today, America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations, Miracles in American History. You'll find that in our Crosstalk store as well. His book Socialism is there, and certainly a warning to where we are in society as well. The America's God and Country, over 800 pages, quotes, founding fathers, constitution, statesmen, politicians, etc. Donation of $30 for the soft cover, $40 for the hardcover, available at vcyamerica.org or by calling 800-729-9829. Bill, thank you so much for being with us here today and for a very special program.
Hey, thank you, Jim, and blessings to all the listeners and those that called in.
Bill Federer with us. And again, his website, though, as well, AmericanMinute.com. Check it out. God bless you, folks. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.